Hello and welcome to the SBS Cycling Podcast for the week of the 4th of June 2015, your weekly review of all things cycling. I'm Al Hines. This week on the show, it's lights out at the Giro d'Italia, but not before the show of resilience from Contador's rivals that came oh so close to breaking that decorated Spaniard. But what to make of it all, with a polarising podium? More broadly, is Contador the greatest ever after collecting Grand Tour number 7, or is that 9? And can he back up at the Tour? Will Wiggins make himself as dominant at the Hour as his rhetoric suggests, or is he just set for a rude awakening? And goodbye to one of our lesser known but no less hardworking colleagues. That is all in this week's show. And with me, Phil Gomes, Rob Arnold, and Sarah Van Behemen.
Hi, Al. Hi, guys.
Lavo, how are you?
I'm fantastic.
It's been too long between drinks.
It has been a while. It's good to be back on my very last day at SBS.
Yep, that's all to come. We're going to be talking about your first day, your last day, your middle days.
The olden days.
How much you've loved living in Sydney, all of that
a
sort
lot.
Of stuff. Yeah, she's not rolling her eyes. Rob, welcome back.
Thanks.
A little bit of an absence while you were making some magazines again. But
skipped a week last week. I finished the tour guide literally a couple of hours ago. And it's printing now and it'll be on sale in mid-June.
So people will know about the
keep
tour.
An eye out. Yeah, it's the official Tour de France guide. We've done. This is our 13th.
Can I ask, are we going on the cover, are we going a scenic or a rider?
Well, we've picked a selection. We've got a selection of four riders. We go with Quintana, Nibali,
and Wootamol,
Froome, and Contador. So we had two last year, and they both crashed out in the first 10 days.
But
then there's also the map, and that's what really. People come to love to go to the tour. I've got a lot of emails of late saying, "Is the tour guide going to be out in time? Because I'm flying to France."
Yeah.
So there's a lot of people getting ready.
Yep. It's become a bit more and more of a pilgrimage.
Holiday, yeah, exactly.
I'm going to France. When is it out?
It's out on the 15th or 16th. We'll see. It's a big magazine with a big poster with the map.
Have so maybe it. We'll have to send you one, Lobo.
You will.
And Gomi, good to see you.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
No, I'm just, you know, what
He's
can I
say? Still catching up on
I'm
sleep
still
from the
Giro. I'm still catching up on sleep. I'm completely rooted, man.
Yeah.
Very, very tired, you mean?
Okay. You know.
All right, let's get into talking about the Giro d'Italia because we've got a lot to get through this week. Giro, Wigo, in case you missed that first bit, because I think I stumbled through half of it, and then some Labo. But let's start with the Giro d'Italia. Well, after three long weeks, we finally got there, and the man many expected to do the business executed a near-perfect performance over the Grand Tour to collect the second, or should that be third, Giro d'Italia title ahead of Fabio Aru and Mikel Landa. There was one moment of weakness from the Spaniard on the penultimate mountain stage that passed over the Col de Finestra, where it could have gone very wrong. But true to form, Contador hung in and limited his losses to rebuff a resurgent Aru. Guys, Alberto Contador delivered the goods.
What a ride. What an amazing ride. I'm going to just put it out there, but let's say the 45 minutes that involved the Mortarillo, that was the best sequence of racing I've seen in 10 years.
Mm.
Yeah, I reckon. I think that was spectacular.
It was incredible.
Where let's just set the scene. You know, he'd punctured or he lost time and we saw Astana go on a mission.
And
Trofimov and some different guys going. And I think if you have to look at some racing from this year, find that footage and just watch it again and again, because books could be written about that 45 minutes or an hour or whatever it was. It was just spectacular because he just came through from the back and picked them all off.
Mm. And then Aru capitulated as well, which was, I think, sort of nailed everything. But it was a far more dramatic final week than probably we expected. I think last week we were talking about a sort of degree of fait accompli to the way Contador was riding. But Astana definitely showed they were still in the race in the last few days. Probably to some extent that sort of surprised me because they've looked like they were a bit ragged before that.
Yeah, look, they started fast and then they had a bit of a dip and it looked like they were going to fall apart and then they somehow recovered in the last couple of days.
Yeah, they somehow recovered.
Somehow recovered.
so much innuendo. So, in so few words.
Look, But at the same, you know, I did a funny little thing on Twitter with the Cycling Central account. Said
that's unusual.
Yeah, that's very odd. Something along the lines of, you know, what will happen tonight's Giro stage? You know, will it retweet if it's going to be hit by a meteor? You know, fave it's going to be savaged by a herd of cats or something like that. And that's
bees,
the thing about
it was bees, wasn't it?
Bees, yes, by a swarm of bees. And but that's been this Giro, right? It's like every day. You get ready and you just kind of go, man, I could really use a quiet night tonight.
Yeah.
Right? And it was just like, no, you're never going to have a quiet night. Not even 500 meters from the finish on a stage, you are not having a quiet night.
Yeah.
And it's going to be carnage.
Probably one of the quieter nights was the one that the, you know, Cycling Central site went down as well. So that was pretty good as well.
That was very good timing. That was a quiet night.
Yeah. But the whole thing actually just goes to illustrate, though,
went to sleep.
That we, you know, Contador, like all great Grand Tour champions, it didn't matter what Astana threw at him. Mm. It didn't matter what the race threw at him. It didn't matter what happened to his bike or to him personally or as a crash or whatever. Mm. He basically shrugged every single one of those incidents off and still won. Mm. That's a Grand Tour champion. That's the kind of Grand Tour champion you have with the names like Eddie and Jacques and the rest.
You were watching it closely, Sarah. What was your highlight?
I think I said this to Phil earlier in the week, that I have a new respect for Contador after seeing that. Because beforehand, I'd never closely followed a race, like a Grand Tour, consistently following him per se, where he's been so dominant, especially with the Tour de France, is when I'm generally doing the morning shifts. So to be actually watching stages throughout was really insightful. But he's just pure class, but also... Mm. You know, he said afterwards that you win a Grand Tour by being able to limit your losses on your bad day. Mm. And the fact that he had built up, what, a 4-minute buffer so that when he did have a bad day, he said, I was never worried about losing the race lead on the stage. And I think for me, I really enjoyed following Contador, and I'm so much more excited for the Tour de France now.
Mm. Yeah, he's been very, I mean, since that, it was like sort of that erring Vuelta where he sort of won and everyone was like, is he going to come back? He doesn't look as good. And he sort of slowly built on that. And then you thought, oh, the Tour back, you know, is he gone again? Is that the end of the Contador era? But I tell you what, he keeps on delivering. And I think it was rightly pointed out by quite a few people that this puts him, and this is what you mentioned just before, Phil, but this is very much puts him in the frame to be one of, if not perhaps the greatest.
He's third on the all-time Grand Tour list.
Yeah.
Right, and he's also of winners, all-time list of winners. He's also second on the all-time list of riders who've had tours stripped from him.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, that is a fair point, which maybe we should talk about, because the podium, we've got two riders from Astana. Now, before going into this race, Astana was mired in controversy, and they still are in a lot of ways. We haven't really escaped that. Contador is obviously someone who has served a ban in the past. You know, if you're a casual cycling fan and you're looking at this race, it doesn't necessarily fill you with confidence. And I'm sure you probably feel mixed feelings about the overall result. I mean, is that Labo? I mean, you said you feel better about Contador winning, but in some ways, do you look at that and go, oh, couldn't it have been someone else? Or
oh, for sure. Like, you never... I don't think it's good for the sport, for outsiders who don't follow cycling, when they know about Contador and Stake and whatever, you know, when they see him winning again, they make the assumptions that the sport is still dirty, which it is, but they make the assumption that he's cheated to win and whatever. And of course, you know, I would have loved to see Richie Porte or somebody else that we hold up as a pillar of, you know, anti-doping. But yeah, I mean, I think that's just acceptance that this is the past of the sport, and it is the state of the sport, you know, with the controversy surrounding Astana, and that's so, kind of what makes cycling
so we just,
cycling.
it's one of those things that we just kind of factor into our general view of the way we approach a race. Mm-hmm. So we kind of go, okay, this is what it is, but this is also a part of the race, and it just helps us deliver a picture.
But when does the point come where we do just talk about, I mean, I know we have to be suspicious and skeptical and critical, but when does the point come where we talk about the race? Look, we haven't. I don't know how many times Contador was contested. I don't know about Aru. I don't know any of the. I didn't see any samples being taken. I didn't look under the microscope. I didn't look at the blood. I didn't analyze it like has hopefully been done in the labs in Europe. So at some point, unless we hear something from those labs, we have to talk about the racing.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
You can be as suspicious and as cynical and as doubtful as you like.
Well,
but I thought what we did see for 3 weeks was amazing racing with a big, with a vast. What's great about Grand Tours is that you do get that vast narrative where you've got sprinters winning, and you know, even the Australian first week, by the third week you were like, who?
Yeah,
you know, and that makes sense. But even, for example, one guy who really impressed me was Stefan Kroesweg from the Lotto NL jumbo team. He was just always going.
Yeah.
Always. He ended up, thankfully, with the top 10, with seventh overall. But he was never in contention for the leader's jersey, but he didn't stop.
Yeah.
And the day that Contador went psycho over the Mortarillo, he was there, and you got to see a lot of him. And he put on an amazing ride.
I think with this Grand Tour, first of all, I think it was the best Grand Tour I've seen in years, even with the absence of guys like Chris Froome and Nairo Quintana and Nibali.
Because of the absence,
and that's possible. Made it a little bit wide open, and sure, okay, Contador did win, but it there was always a threat. And there were a lot of other stories. Kreuzweg's one of them. The sprint competition, even though it was not necessarily a sprinter's race this year, the sprint competition went right down to the final stage. The mountains classification was also hard fought. You had guys like Kreuzweg. You had guys like Leopold Koenig. Mm-hmm. All of them now inching up and putting themselves in the frame as riders that you will see in the next few years in Grand Tours.
Well, even Heserdal to come fifth overall, like, you know, that's amazing to see, because he was a long way down after the first, you know, let's say the first half.
Yeah.
And then he just battled on and just kept on picking off time.
Time, yeah.
And it just goes to show, it's that sort of, you know, just ride to the end. It doesn't matter if Richie had been there and didn't have those mishaps, those 2 minutes that we debated a couple of weeks ago were so negligible because they've gone through the Dolomites.
Yeah.
Like Hank kept saying, that's coming up.
To loop back to the guy that won, let's look ahead now to the Tour de France, because this is the thing that's been sort of talked about in terms of the context of why he's doing the Giro. You know, this is the thing that I sort of was looking at. You know, Contador never seemed to overextend himself. He seemed to be riding within himself. I'm not saying he didn't push himself like that day that we saw him struggle, but does he have something in the tank to take to the Tour de France now? And is it realistic to say that he could be riding high up in the general classification at the Tour, let alone winning? Because I don't know if we've seen someone convincingly come from the Giro and ride even a top five ride at the Tour in some time.
What was it, 2011 when he tried, I get the years muddled.
No, yeah, it was 11.
I'm sorry, yeah. When, for example,
when he won the Tour, then he got stripped, and then he went to the Tour.
No, 2000.
It was 11. It was the Evans year.
Yeah, when Cadell won. And so let's take, for example, that critical moment going to the Galibia when Andy was off the front, and you see Cadell doing that epic ride that I've spoken about before in the chase, and that's when he rode Contador off his wheel.
Yeah.
And that was the year that he did the Giro.
Yeah.
And ordinarily, Contador would have been there with him. But there were many, many instances that led to him, you know, dropping the wheel of Evans and losing a bit of time that day. But that was, to me, that's maybe what we can be waiting for in July, where there is a moment where he doesn't hold on. But then, in having said that, let's consider the crisis on the Finestra. If anyone in the peloton rode through a crisis with the panache that Contador did, then we'd be aghast. I am aghast. I think if he was losing time like he was, and he still looked so bloody good on the bike, then I think that indicates that he can suffer a moment of crisis and still not lose swathes of time.
Yeah.
Whereas when Richie loses time, he makes sure he does it well and loses 22 minutes.
Yeah, and not just him, just about every other rider as well. I mean, you know, when they blow, they blow.
Yeah.
But I'm going to err on the side of history and just say it will be impossible for Contador to win the Giro de France.
The Giro de France would be good.
That would be a good race.
Yeah. So I'm going to say it's impossible.
6 weeks long.
Yeah, that's right.
But what's he do between now? Like, also, I mean, comparing him with Pantani is irrelevant because we know it was a different era. But let's just say when Pantani won both in 98, I think he was third last in the prologue in Dublin of the tour. And he had no, I don't think he had illusions of winning the tour in 98 because, well, there were many people evicted from that race. It was a debacle. It was a fiasco. I remember being
there. It was half the field didn't finish. So, like, I mean, you've got to look at that in very special circumstances.
Let's be clear. Let's not compare anything with what Pantani did.
The sport is still scarred by that particular race.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah. I don't think I had a point there.
I just want to say that I hope that Contador makes it to the third week to actually be there and be competitive. I hope that, you know, like Froome crashing out last year or, you know, or him breaking his leg, that something like that doesn't befall him and we actually do get to see, can he back it up and can he do it?
Yeah, and can we see Froome, Nibali, Contador, you know, uninjured, you know, in that second, third week? Because, I mean, that was last year, that was really the massive anticlimax. It was like all of the build-up and then the two main rivals and Nibali just sort of just walked over everyone.
But you think with four main contenders, chances are someone is going to get ruled out by something, like an injury or a crash or
taking someone else's wheel.
It's a time penalty.
Yeah. I mean, you know, let's say, not that that would ever happen in a Grand Tour these days. But,
also, I think what is, and I did a little interview with Luke Durbridge after he had finished his first Tour de France, and I said, okay, you've ridden both the Giro and the Tour, let's compare the two. And everyone says it, but he gives the example of it. The Giro is hard in May, 100%. Like what we saw the last couple of weeks has been fantastic racing and full on, full gas guys at their peak of their condition. But it does raise a notch at the Tour. It simply does. Everything's bigger. I mean, we repeat it time and time again. It's not like this is new. It's not a shock of, July and we're racing for yellow. That's more important than a pink jersey. It just evolves like that.
Yeah.
And the Tour is so much harder, so much more difficult, so much more pressure, so much everything that still plays in Contador's favour because he seems to manage everything.
Yeah, he does seem, he's also at that point in his career where you'd have to say that, you know, age, you know, I think we'll talk about this with Wiggins, but I like the fact that when he was talking about our record, he said one of the things that counts in his favour is the ability that when you're older, your body can take a higher training load because you've developed that over a longer period of time. And Contador is sort of in a similar part of his career. He's got all of those runs on the board. He's got all of those kilometres in the legs. And I think if anyone is going to be able to do it, probably, you know, in the next year, maybe we could maybe give him one more good chance, but he's going to start curtailing a bit. But he's still there. He's still very much in the frame.
You know, that's interesting what you're talking about, but about tours in your legs and that sort of thing. Because if you look at this TDF, the two best Grand Tour riders in the world are Contador and Nibali. Right? They're the guys who've got serious experience in their legs. But I haven't picked either one of them to win.
Who did you pick? You got Quintana.
Quintana. But Nibali second. And Contador third. And Froome fourth.
I think I put Froome fourth or fifth. But then I looked at it this morning and we're going to Prince, it's too late. But I don't know. I really don't think he's going to be there. I don't know.
It's weird, isn't it?
It just strikes me as fragile. So I don't want that. But going back to what you were saying, Sarah, you know, like if it was the perfect scenario, everyone finishes at least. But that's, cycling isn't that kind to the...
But if you go by this year's Giro and if you go by history, it's the guys who are well-seasoned are the ones who are going to perform in the most difficult periods of a race.
Yeah.
And this year, despite me saying I think Quintana will win this race, right, it still means that Contador and Nibali are probably the two guys, based on that criteria, who are going to be the ones to watch.
I'd love a surprise.
Yeah.
I mean, everyone always wants a surprise, you know. I'd love
TJ Van Garderen.
All right, please, come on, Phil. Let's not be ridiculous. All right, guys, let's move on from the Giro d'Italia because and the Tour de France because we're not there yet either.
But we will be soon.
But not that soon.
Sarah will be there very soon.
Yes. Reminder to everyone listening, highlights from the Giro d'Italia can be viewed on SBS, on demand, and on the Cycling Central website. And while you're there, consider giving your feedback to all our broadcast offerings in the Exchange survey. And if you want to give the podcast a thumbs up, please do so.
Yeah, talk about us.
Yeah.
We get very few comments about the podcast.
Well, we get occasional, you know.
Everyone's much more... Anyway. I'd like to know what people think. Please let us know.
Rob's got the vanity sort of aspect of the whole thing.
No, if then we can improve it. If you know what's wrong, then we can improve.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's all right. Yeah. All right, guys, we will move on to Bradley Wiggins, our record. Whatever I do on Sunday, I hope someone goes for the record again. Even if they fail, if no one attacks them because they're frightened of failing, then the record will sit there dormant. And that's what sport's all about. Bradley Wiggins speaking to Sky just the other day about his plans to break 55 kilometres when he hits the hour. And that will be one gargantuan task. Guys, it's June 7, Sunday in London. What do we make of it? Can Bradley Wiggins do the, nearly impossible? 55 kilometres is a big ask. Chris Boardman's record was set with the Superman position, which we all know is now banned. Significant aerodynamic advantage, but that is what he is saying he can do. I suppose if anyone can do it, Bradley Wiggins he's got to be up there. But
so he was saying yesterday or the day before, 221 laps at 16.2 seconds per lap.
Yeah.
Go to a velodrome, folks, and do a 16-second lap.
Just do one of those
just
laps.
Just do one. And then sit up and tell me if you could do it for 221 laps. I think it's going to be fascinating. It's definitely the hype is everything surrounding this builds up to what's going to be a remarkable hour. My 10-year-old, who turned 10 a couple of weeks ago, he wakes up.
Formerly 8-year-old.
No, but every couple of days he'll wake up because he came to the Bobridge Hour, for example, and he watched that. And he wakes up and he'll say, why can't they ride the Superman? If the Superman position's banned, why don't they just stretch the bike out? Like in other words, he's going to bed thinking about what can they do to make the position more efficient.
Rob, I feel bad for your kids in advance.
No.
He's transfixed because of the Bobridge experience.
I'm actually worried now for Rob's washing machine because that 10-year-old sounds like he's a future boardman and he's going to pull the bits out of your washing machine and build his own bike.
Yeah. O'Brien's got a lot
O'Brien.
To...
Oh, sorry, O'Brien. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I mean, and at the same time, we talk about all the different things that go into the physiology of the positions that were achieved by O'Brien. And Louis, my 10-year-old, says to him, but how can he have ridden that way? If you look at the O'Brien position, I get distracted talking about the hour. I can go off on so many different tangents. Yeah. But can Wiggins beat it? Yeah.
Yeah.
He can beat...
Well, he can certainly... I think there's not much... Not many people are saying he won't beat Dowsett's record, which currently stands at 52 and a half, thereabouts. 55, though, we're talking about 2.5 kilometres more than that.
But it's fortunate that there has been this succession, you know, from Jens to Brandl to Rowan to Dowsett, and to see a couple of failures along the way, some of which have been well documented, and others like the Canadian experience that someone broke the Canadian record. I think they did 48k an hour.
Really?
Yeah.
How did I miss that?
I don't know.
Was Wayne Gretzky, wasn't
probably.
It?
Probably.
Yeah.
Anyway, blah, blah, blah. The point is We get to understand that 55Ks is such an immense mark. If he pulls it off, it's going to be amazing atmosphere. Mm.
Labo, what do you think?
I certainly agree he can break the record. I'm doubtful that he can do 55Ks. Like, that's incredible. And I think listening at what he goes to say further in that Sky interview is that it's about being consistent, absolutely consistent throughout, but knowing your body that you can hold it. But he also said, like, mentally you are just riding the black line, being that consistent for an hour, and that's the real skill. But I think it's just typical Wiggo to come out and say, you know, never mind that the record's only 53Ks, I'm going to go further, I'm going to be extra, I'm going to be the best.
Yeah.
And I mean, I love Wiggo. I just love his personality and what he brings to the sport. So I'm really excited.
I feel the same about him. Like, I love that he can talk the talk because he's walked the walk and he's done everything. He's ticked everything that he wanted to do.
Didn't win Paris-Roubaix.
Close enough.
But he tried.
Close enough.
Pretty much.
Close enough.
No.
He's a winner in his own mind.
Basically washed up.
But, and also we're talking about a guy who's got true track heritage.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know, if you look at the difference between Rowan, for example, and Thomas Dekker, I mean, the rides were... chalk and cheese.
They were different. They were
one
different
was
rides.
Absolutely efficient and one was just...
And
then even Rowan and Dowsett. What Dowsett did was bloody amazing. Yep. To get out of the saddle a couple of times and lift it and then get to that where he really smashed it in the last 10 minutes was fantastic to watch.
He does mention Dowsett's record, Wiggins, in that interview, and he was talking about how he's looked at a few of them. You know, Rowan sort of fell off a little bit towards the end of his ride, probably came out a little bit too fast. Bobridge definitely came out too fast. Dowsett actually increased his speed throughout, but he actually said that even that wasn't that efficient. That just meant that he had more in the tank. I think even Alex Dowsett said as much. Yeah. And that's why he's saying this 16.1. If he can hold, you know, that mark for the entire thing, then he's going to be able to do it.
Wiggins is like the perfect distillation of a cycling athlete for this event. You're not going to get anyone better. Due respect to Boardman, who also you would probably put in that category. But
the sport's evolved enormously in 20 years.
Yeah. So, you know, I look at Wiggins and I think, well, it's really not a matter of can, it's a matter of by how much. And I feel the same way about this event as I did when Alex Dowsett hit the track. I felt, you know, this was going to be inevitable. And I think within the first 20 minutes, well, no, he's on target. He's sitting on his laps and he'll be just knocking them over one by one.
But there might be a Finestra moment. You know, like imagine, like to me, the best thing that
gravel
would happen
on the track. Is
no, is sorry, yeah, that's good. If the best thing that could happen is at 55 minutes, there's a full gas, absolute lights out moment. I think that'd be spectacular.
Yeah,
to watch.
But you know what? But of course, he'll have already put so much in the bank. You know, that he can basically just get off and push the bike to the finish.
So wait, is that what the Finisterre moment would be in a Wiggins thing? he's tracking it 67 kilometres.
That's right.
And then he has a Finisterre moment and comes back to 55.
That's right.
Good to know. All right.
But
all
look,
right,
the cool thing about it is that what Wiggins does for this event is that he brings this event into a wider cycling, to a wider public consciousness where up until now, this event has really only been about us.
Yeah.
People who care about the sport, who understand the sport, who understand what the record means. Whereas Wiggins, especially in the UK, is an athlete that sort of is above cycling. And he does people know who he is because he is a celebrity.
Well, didn't tickets sell out in like 7 minutes or something ridiculous?
Why did it take so long? But at the same he lures the fans in. But also there's a photo of him posing in his skin suit, and I said to some people when I looked at it, you kind of want to hate him because he can.
My
look
mum
like
does.
A, oh, he can. That, he's fascinating and he's interesting and he speaks his mind and he rides a bike really well. There's so much to like about him, but sometimes you just think, what a
wanker. No, it's spot on, Rob. Like my mum watched Mama Graham Norton, and then she's like, oh, you know, he just rubbed her up the wrong way.
Yeah.
She didn't think he was impressive. She didn't, and she knows he won Olympic gold and Tour de France, but she doesn't have it, you know, what I find really endearing in him. She was really blasé about him.
Yeah, but we're used to his sense of humor as well.
Yeah.
As
I guess
the way he presents. So
that's what sport's all about, you know. You build a personality so that you can either knock it down or really lord it.
Yeah, love
I
them
know.
Or you hate them.
Yeah.
But then, you know, I listened to Wigo on, was BBC Five Live? No, it was a music show just recently, you know. And then when you listen to him in other contexts, that's when you realize that this is somebody who is there's more there.
He's a thoughtful character.
He's a thoughtful, interesting person who can really talk about things like music, which he loves deeply, which we know he does, and he presents so well. And you know, if there's anyone who understands cycling on a deeply intellectual level,
a cellular level,
it's him.
I wonder this. Generally, the GC kind of guy, like Wiggins or people who win the Tour de France, they can have sociopathic tendencies. Look at Armstrong; like he was totally 100% a sociopath.
We still like you, Lance. It's okay.
But Wiggins doesn't seem...
Legal disclaimer.
Wiggins doesn't seem to have that need to inflate his ego. He's of the opinion that, I don't know, you can either like me or not. And that's maybe a bit of difference.
It's refreshing. It's far more refreshing. There's way too many guys who have massive egos but are also deeply insecure about it. Wiggins just doesn't care.
No, exactly.
I think that is so good to see. I think it's similar to Contador in a lot of ways, although he doesn't quite have the same ego, but he's just a very important... Like, he doesn't care what other people think, and he leads.
Well, he clearly doesn't care what anyone thinks. He held up three fingers when he crossed the finish line at the Giro.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Well, that Contador, was Contador,
which
we're
is
talking
to
about.
Which is say nine three, grand to his three, oh, yeah, three, yeah, yeah, Giros.
Maybe
Giros,
he's just really, you know, bad at maths. I don't know.
Dos.
Unlikely. Dos. Unlikely.
All right, guys, that's enough about our record because, you know,
There's never enough about the hour.
Let's face it, yeah, you know, I did already say that I didn't care about the hour record and then proceeded to talk
but
about it
this
for
is
a
the
lot.
Thing. You've grown to like it, haven't you?
Have
it's,
I?
It's an interesting event. You have.
Professionally, perhaps.
Because I've watched, you know, we've discussed this now since this all started with Yenzi. Yeah. And, you know, initially you were very, who cares, who gives a damn, whatever.
Yeah. I was in a dark place, you know that.
You know,
do you wake up thinking, if why don't they stretch a bike?
You know... I've been doing, you know, the angles at home. I've got like a play bike. And, you know, it's amazing. Yeah. We're setting up a wind chamber, wind tunnel. Mm.
Have you gone out and gone as hard as you can for an hour?
I haven't done 16.1 seconds. No. Anyway.
And never will.
No, exactly. All right, guys.
So just on that topic, can I just say one thing? There are velodromes all around this country and you can ride on them for relatively little money. Even the Olympic Velodrome in Sydney, you can go out and
they're relatively
make the
disused.
Investment in
they're
time
disused.
And really get a taste of what it's right. Just ride a fixed gear if you haven't. You'll love it. It's a great sensation.
Yeah.
And it's daunting and it's frightening and it's fun and it's great.
And you'll probably appreciate a lot more what these guys do as well.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Especially when you're reaching for the brakes or you go to freewheel.
I did that once actually, Senior Park, riding a fixie round quite fast and then sort of tried to do that. And you're like, oh, this is weird.
Yeah.
You need to get used to it. Don't make sure that you're under controlled environment and start slowly. That's all I'll say. All right, guys, Wiggins, our record attempt, takes place in London Sunday, June 7, and it'll be available via some sort of live stream, though not through SBS. But it is out there. Canny, Carney, let us know before Sunday. Otherwise, you're cheating. All right, let's move on. And goodbye to Labo. It's with a heavy heart that we farewell Sarah Van Beemen from St Leonard's after 3 years' service. A bit more. She's had to deal with Phil and I for all of that time, and for that alone, she deserves a medal. But understandably, she's also had enough and is off to travel the world. And for that, we can't fault her for a minute. Sarah uprooted from NZ to come work for us just after the 2012 Tour de France. And while you may not have seen her as much on television or a byline as much as others, she's done some fantastic selfless work. And for all of that, she will be heartily missed. Labo.
Oh, thanks, Al.
Yeah, no
it's
worries.
Lovely. I definitely deserve a medal.
I got that from a pro forma.
The high point for you at working here was working with me, wasn't it?
Oh, definitely. Actually, you know, listeners, beware. Phil Gomes has taught me so much about life. Like, the stuff that he knows is incredible.
Yeah, the shit that he knows, more like.
Can I just interrupt? Where does Labo come from?
Yeah, well, I was going to say, Labo.
This was
the origins.
Yeah, go ahead.
So I used to sit opposite one of our football editors, Tom Finlay, who works on the World Game, and it just evolved out of Labo M, the opera, and then, because my last name is obviously
Sarah
Van
Beemen.
And then, you know, how any good nickname always gets shortened, it's become Labo or Labs, but I don't really like Labs. So, Labo.
It sounds worse and worse, doesn't it?
Labs. Labs.
But Labo works for me.
But Labs.
Yeah.
I can't even help it. Can you take us, because, like, probably, I don't know if many people would know much about you, really, but when you came to join us, you were coming from NZ. So, set the scene. What were you doing in NZ in...
Never would have guessed.
Never would have picked it.
No, the accent is obviously very difficult giveaway. But what were you doing before you joined us?
Before I joined Cycling Central, I came directly from roadcycling.co.nz, which is a great New Zealand cycling website, but I only had a very short stint there. Before that, I was working for Bike New Zealand, which is the equivalent of Cycling Australia as New Zealand's National Cycling Federation. And I was in a sort of communications PR role there for nearly 3 years, I think. Admittedly, when I joined Cycling Central, I did not know a lot about professional road cycling because if you know anything about New Zealand cycling, you'll know it's track, and more track.
You know a lot about track, though.
Ah, she
does.
A wee bit.
She does know about track.
So is that because people are probably doing this as well, but you have a bit of a family connection to cycling as well?
I do. So my cousin is Shane Archbold, who now rides for Bora, the professional continental team, but was a track cyclist, had the best mullet in the world. You may have
his
seen
nickname,
him.
His nickname, well, his Twitter still, handle.
His Twitter handle is the Flying Mullet, but you may also know him as Novi, which is his world. Well,
didn't we also last see him lying face down? Yes.
In
the forest of Arenberg?
He was there with the lead group, went down. I think he broke his nose in his very first Paris-Roubaix. He also competed in the Omnium at the London Olympics and had the unfortunate moment when he punctured midway through the individual pursuit in the Omnium. And so, you know, with the Omnium, you need to complete the event. So he was forced to restart. I guess that family connection has been a huge motivator for me in terms of working in cycling. I had a weird progression to become interested in cycling, but I think following Shane's career has definitely been something that's kept me here.
And Labs, I mean, how did you join Cycling Central?
How did I join Cycling Central per se?
How did you get in the door? How did they let you in?
Oh, I don't know. It was a tweet from Al, really, that said, hey, come and work for us.
Damn right it
Which,
was.
At this point, I had never even met Al, and if I had, I probably wouldn't have applied for the job.
So heartwarming.
That is. So that all happened at the 2012 Worlds, is that right?
No, I never went to Worlds, actually, year. I would have liked to have gone, but that was when I
saw active people there, but I don't think anyone was running
was
around
there.
Quite as much as Sarah.
It's just so exciting.
That was a career highlight for me. I love those Worlds.
They were fantastic.
Super fun.
But, Labs, and then you came and joined us and quickly found, well, you had a fast learning curve, but you've done some pretty amazing things here as well. You've gotten to go to Malaysia, went to the Tour de Langkawi, you've been to...
The what?
Langkawi.
You were trying to
Langkawi.
Think of
You've been to Tour of Southland a few times.
My favourite race.
Main Southland correspondent, I would say.
New Zealand Cycle Classic correspondent.
What's it been like working at Cycling Central? Because it would have been an initial. As you said, you didn't know much, but you would have learnt a lot.
It's been a huge learning curve. I think sort of learning the intricacies and the personalities in professional cycling. And I think the first year I was kind of going through blind because I didn't have any understanding of what each race was and why it was significant and how the calendar was built as a whole. I really enjoyed following the National Road Series and getting, because I had quite a firm grasp on the New Zealand domestic scene because I'd done a lot of work covering that, but kind of seeing the Australian equivalent was really nice. And I've really enjoyed seeing how many Kiwis have crossed the ditch in the past few years and have not only competed in the National Road Series, but actually really excelled over here.
Joe Cooper.
What about when...
Paddy Bevan.
Mm-hmm. Just to go off on another tangent. A lot of what you do is managing the online. So you're working with Phil on Cycling Central. And because of that, you get a lot of feedback. You get instant feedback, and you know if you post a Facebook item, it'll be liked or not liked.
Yeah.
And similarly with Twitter, and you get instant engagement. What's the take home of what the reader / viewer really likes? What surprises you about that? I guess
they really like Australian content. Anything that we do about Cadell or Orica Green Edge and that, they really, I mean, obviously we're Australian based. Mm. That goes off. They like things that are entertaining, like anyone does, all those videos and that. But I think sometimes it's the really surprising pieces. I think we know when you were here, Al, sometimes we would do pieces and we would put them up and we think, oh, these are going to go, you know, gung-ho, and then they don't. And then you put up some other story that you've really not just cobbled together but really didn't take a lot of effort, and you're talking about something and it goes... Well.
One of the ones that did really well last year that you wrote was the Ben Hill piece, which you sort of thought this will be a throwaway piece, and that did really well because I think it resounded with a lot of people.
Yeah.
Do you want to just give people a quick wrap of what that story was?
Well, Ben Hill is an Australian cyclist who was racing at the Tour of Southland and did really well. He won a couple of stages and was wearing the leader's jersey, but he had come back from a 2-year suspension for taking a supplement that he shouldn't have taken, and it was, my concern was that the story was, you know, going to get out in the New Zealand media and they weren't necessarily going to present it in a positive light if they didn't know a lot about cycling. So I managed to track down Ben and spoke to him, and I felt that I could really tell his story. Mm. And that did really well, I think, because I very much gave him the opportunity to lead the story, and I just kind of put it together. And so I think giving him that platform was really good.
And in the end, it was quite interesting how he, like, the whole thing was, you know, he had this really difficult time and was almost almost suicidal, and, I mean, without going too deeply into it, but, I mean, he was...
We won't say that.
Mm. But I think, you know, which a lot of people didn't even realise. So, yeah. I mean, all that sort of stuff is really interesting. And the other one that, Lab, I wanted to bring up was that story you did on Rian Nolan as well. That was, which was fantastic, which was a couple of years ago now.
And that story still goes on, by the way, because Rian's... He's still riding.
That's right.
So Rian Nolan is a Kiwi cyclist who I came across when I was working there. But he first really caught my attention at the New Zealand Cycle Classic a couple of years ago when he was racing for the New Zealand national team. Rian has a really checkered past. He was sort of in and out of prison for a whole lot of different offences. He was a drug addict. But he basically turned his life around through cycling. He was in this rehabilitation centre, and one of the activities that they did was cycling, and he found, you know, he got endorphins and there was this, camaraderie with other cyclists. And basically through that, I think he's used cycling as a means, you know, to keep him on the straight and narrow. Mm. But not only that, like, he's actually done so well at it. Like, for him, like, representing New Zealand at the New Zealand Cycle Classic was this huge career highlight, but he still continues to ride and to win races in New Zealand. And yeah, it's been really inspirational for me.
Philip Gomes, you have your hand up. Yes, yes, Phil.
Which brings us back to this point that I've tried to make in the past about...
Is it about Sarah?
It's about dopers.
Okay. so related.
Yeah, it is related, as a matter of fact. So what you see in Rayon is somebody who... is a reformed character.
Yeah.
Someone who's done his time and come back, and he's back in society and he's a contributing member of society, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And it brings up this whole question that I have about dopers in particular, not a question really, but it's a point I keep trying to make to people. It's like, how long do you hold this against someone if they've doped, they've been pinged, and then they come back after serving 2 years or whatever? I mean, do you keep hammering them for that, right? I mean, do we keep hammering somebody like Rayon for his past? The answer is...
Well, I mean, in some ways it's different because he's served a jail term, and in some ways, like, that is the punishment.
He has.
Yes, that's right. But, we're looking at, you can make parallels with a 2-year suspension, for example, you know, for
with
doping.
Ben Hill and then,
yeah, I mean, we have to be able to allow people back in society.
I have this motto, and it's that all saints have pasts and all sinners have futures.
Mm.
And therefore, you should hold. You know, what someone did in the past, I think I look back on things that I've done and why they may not be illegal or hurting anybody else. But you think, I would certainly not do those things now that I'm wise,
like,
at the grand
in
old age
years.
Of 26. But, you know, I think you need to, everybody changes and evolves, and we all make mistakes, and they're just to varying degrees.
So, Labs, we've sort of alluded to it, but what are you up to next? You're about to head on some adventures, so can you give us everyone there? Just so they can, you know, maybe meet you in France or something.
you can actually meet her on Dutch Corner on Alpe d'Huez.
Oh, yes, you can.
In July.
Yeah, she's very lucky.
I am going travelling for about 5 months, here, there and everywhere, kind of following a logical route that will take me through Europe and America back to New Zealand. I'm going to my very first Tour de France. Not as part of SBS, but more as a fan. And so I'm planning on seeing the Grand Depart in Utrecht and then maybe a couple of other stages, and definitely will be on Alpe d'Huez. So I'm really excited about that. For me, I was a cycling fan first and foremost before it became my job or my career. And so...
Has working in it
soured that at all?
Yeah.
Or
there
changed it?
There have definitely been times where I have thought, this is it, you know, the passion is no longer there. But now that I'm about to leave and I know I'm going to the tour, no, I think it's there alive and well. And I just feel I'm so much better off because I understand it more. I know so much more.
It was like the BuzzFeed eulogy of Andy Schleck's career probably was the...
The high point.
That definitely was.
Yeah. All right. Labs, it's been a pleasure. We wish you all the best, and I'm sure Phil would love to have you back when you return, but I don't know.
I'm not coming back. To Australia.
You see, this is the thing, right? You say
all
that,
these children
you say
leave
that
the nest.
Now. You say that now. No doors ever close.
No, that's true.
Yeah.
And don't burn any bridges. Hey, Al.
Well, I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, you're still here, so.
Guys, it's been a pleasure. Thanks all for joining. And, Labs, again, wish you well.
Thank you.
A shout out to the devoted Catherine Whelan, who puts together all our cycling productions behind the scenes and who's had some very sad news lately. Our thoughts go out to her and her family at this time. And for those that don't know, Catherine is the lead producer for the Tour de France. She's been working on the Giro d'Italia this year. She worked on the Tour de France last year, and she brings you
the way the pictures look on your TV.
Yeah,
she does amazing. She organises chaos.
Yeah, yeah.
She does.
Totally.
Great montage, absolutely.
And she has to put up with Tomo.
She has to put up with Tomo, and for some reason she has taken a liking to him, which I've never fully understood.
Anyway, guys,
thanks for joining us. Don't forget, for all your news, blogs, videos, pics and more, just go to sbs.com.au/cyclingcentral. And that, my friends, is that. Bye for now.